podcast with Dan and Scott. Hottest golf podcast, whether you like it or not. First one back in the day when that's a put at the park. 7 p.m. special where they played after dark. From the birdies to the focus to the losses and the win. Welcome podcast, patron to the show. Lead the pen, get busy golfing or get busy dying. Hottest golf podcast and I swear I ain't lying. Yeah. Leave the pen.
Podcast patrons, Leave the Pin Podcast is super stoked to have Gashouse Golf as their official clothing sponsor for the podcast. Go to gashousegolf.com, find them on all forms of social media at Gashouse Golf. Gashouse makes affordable, eye-catching, one-of-a-kind polos that help you stand out from the crowd. Why spend $75, $100, or even more on polos that make you look like everybody else when you can get one at an affordable price from Gashouse Golf? Hit the ball a mile and look damn good doing it.
Welcome back, podcast patrons. It's another episode of Leave the Pin Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Dan. I've got on my good buddy, Tyler the Creator. We're going to be joined shortly by co-host Moan Scotto, Scott Staub himself. And today is all about coaching high school. Tyler and I are both high school golf coaches. Scott's going to kind of moderate. We'll tell some stories, let you know what it's like to actually coach high school golf, how much coaching we actually do compared to maybe some other coaches in our league, tell some funny stories that have happened along the way, and just kind of get into the nuts and bolts of coaching future collegiate golfers. I put that in quotation, Tyler. You like that, future collegiate golfers?
I like it. I'm yet to coach one that'll be a future collegiate golfer, but I look forward to it one day.
Yeah, I've never had one. I had a good golfer when I coached up north where you originally started coaching as well. He played golf in college, but not for a team at all. So why don't we introduce to the people, Tyler, who you are. They probably know you from all of our social media as well as doing our graphic design, but tell them who you are in the golf coaching world.
Yeah, so I've been coaching golf now for 6 or 7 years. I'm not exactly sure. But it's been a bit. I took over at North when Dan, he was teaching at the school I was at, and he decided to leave the program, and he left it to me. And so I took over from him, ran that team for about 6 years, and then just recently switched schools to actually the school that Dan teaches at. I teach there now too, and it was perfect timing when I took over my teaching position. The head coach there for golf was retiring, so I took over that program and had my first year there this year.
Yeah, it's funny because I kind of decided really late, last minute that I didn't want to coach up at North anymore. My kids were getting older. They would get into competitive junior golf, so it was just way too much time. So I told them, hey, I'm not coaching. I said, but I've already pre-planned. I've got the perfect person for you. I said, I got Tyler, and he's going to step into coaching golf. And I remember sitting down with you and going over that stuff, and you're like, I don't really know how to coach golf. And I'm like, dude, it doesn't matter. We've won 2 matches over the last, I don't know, what was the school open for that time, 20 years or yeah. So? We won two matches over 20 years. Like, anything you do is going to be, you know, above par, above anything that they've had done, you know, before in the past. And I think you and I go down in history as the 2 most successful golf coaches at East Stroudsburg North. You, coincidentally, being a little bit more successful than me.
Yeah, yeah. And you did say anything I did would be above par. And I could promise you the kids I coached were well above par. It was interesting. So I come from I didn't play high school golf. I love the sport. As you guys have probably seen on social media, every time that Dan beats me, I'm not great at the sport, but I love it to death. And it's kind of nice coaching the kids that are high handicappers, because I was a very high handicapper. So I'm able to get them down to a more competitive level. I'm not, you know, working on perfect swing mechanics or anything. It's more about teaching the game. But I came into golf, coaching golf as a previous, I used to coach swimming and coach swimming for a long time. I was a swimmer in high school, swam a little bit in college, and then coached some very successful teams, some less successful teams with swimming. And basically that season is 6 months long, 6 days a week. And the golf season is 6 weeks long, 4 days a week. So it was a very easy choice to, now that I have two kids of my own, I wanted a little bit less time at school, a little bit more time home. So switching into coaching golf instead of coaching swimming was the right play for me. And it's been awesome. I've been loving it. And I've been, you know, getting kids that have never touched a golf club in their life to fall in love with the sport. And I have multiple kids that have literally never golfed until their senior year. They decide to join the varsity golf team and then they continue. And that's kind of why I do it. I'm not looking to, you know, get kids in the collegiate level. You know, I'm not going to have any D1 college athletes come for me, but I am going to have kids that fall in love with the game and keep the game going forever.
I think one of the things that we've got to let the listeners and the podcast patrons understand is that the school that we both coached at, East Stroudsburg North, even though it is in what most people would consider the boonies, it is definitely a lower income, it has the traits of a real inner city urban school. So you don't get golfers. I mean, that's the bottom line. I remember, Tyler, here's a hilarious story. I remember recruiting at the middle school one time, my third or fourth year, and I brought one of my golfers over. We went during middle school lunch. We went table to table, and we asked kids, have you ever played golf? Do you have golf clubs? Have you been to, you know, pitch and putt, mini golf, anything? We probably saw 1,000 kids that day, no lie. And I got one kid that told me he played mini golf. Another kid said, is it just like Wii golf? Because I play that on Nintendo and I'm pretty good. I beat my mom all the time. And then the other kid, the greatest line ever from a middle school kid, I guess it was a kid there that was like always in trouble. And I had on a very nice, very expensive pair of sneakers, and he commented on them. And he came running over to me to tell me how much he liked them. Well, he was supposed to be in like middle school cafeteria timeout, and he got yelled at from across the room. And he runs back into his little cubicle, which is like cordoned off so he can't see people. He's eating lunch by himself. And as he goes past, I hear the lady yelling at him, and she's like, you've got to sit down. You're always in trouble. You can't be doing this stuff. You're going to get another day of lunch detention. And he looks at me and he goes, it was so worth it.
Yeah, I mean, so my last year coaching up there, I was able to reach out to a sporting goods company and get them to give a donation to the golf program, because 60% or more of our students were on free or reduced lunch. Most of them, I would say, I don't know the exact numbers, but over half of them, their parents live and work in the city and come home on the weekends. And these kids, they don't have the extra income to go out and even try a local muni golf course.
You know what I think it really shows, and I think you and I both see this a ton, is that there is a very big barrier to entry to golf, and we lived it and experienced it, not for you and I per se, but for these kids. There was no way that they were ever exposed, and even if they were exposed and decided that they liked the sport, they realized that, look, I can't afford clubs, balls, tees, clothing, rides to a course, payment for a course, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, I mean, when I was a kid, I mean, I grew up in a, a middle-class home, and it was even tough for us when I wanted to start golfing more. It was always, you know, if you do this, we can't do this. And so it's really nice now with my son, he's 8, and coaching with the team, it's not, we do not play at the best course in the world, but they have been amazing to us. And I can show up with my 8-year-old son whenever I want and get on the course for free. And so he's getting more exposure to golf than I ever got, than most kids get. And so, you know, I've learned from the best to learn ways to not have to pay a lot for golf.
You know, I realized, and I know you're mentioning me, I realized the longer I get into this podcasting game, golf social media, meeting people. I mean, hell, Tyler, the other day someone called me a social media influencer.
That's what I've always thought of you as.
Well, I don't. I never want to be called that whatsoever. But the more that I see it, the more I realize that for a lot of people, there is this crazy barrier to entry into golf. However, a lot of golf is free. You know, like if you're in business and you know people, golf is literally free. I don't want to brag, and I hate saying this, but I've literally had or have received thousands of dollars, maybe even tens of thousands of dollars at this point of free golf, right? Because it's just, hey, go ahead. You can go out and play. You know, yeah. It's not like I'm getting, I'm not getting anything tangible, right? People are not giving me golf balls or carts or clubs or bags, but the act of golf, you know, really is free. And, you know, what I've talked to pros all the time is, and I mean, you know, head pros at courses and stuff, not PGA pros, is that once they make their money for the day, per se, you know, they have so many rounds during the day that they can just give out to people. And it's great exposure for that course. But if you're not in this business, if you don't do what we do, you know, how do you come upon that aside from dumb luck?
Well, and it's also, because you and I have played a lot, and you and I are the same where, you know, if we get given, you know, if somebody says, oh yeah, you can come out for free, we're not calling them up and going, hey, 10 a.m. Saturday, can we get on? 8 a.m. Saturday, can we get on the course? We play a lot of evening golf. We play a lot of afternoon golf, stuff where the course has openings, and we're not, you know, we're fixing up the course as we play. You and I are
always fixing
ball marks, and they kind of respect it because we're there, we're playing, and, you know, we're making sure the course is running nice, and it doesn't cost them a dime to put us on the course.
No, not at all. Hey, so our guest moderator, Moan Scotto, Scott Stapp, just, you know, flew in from upstate New York. Scott, what's a good word?
What is the good word? It's freezing here. It's like 20 degrees below.
Yeah, God.
There's snow on the ground. It couldn't be less golf friendly at the moment. So, is what it is.
Tyler and I had a 2-hour delay today because of the snow. Did you get any impact up there?
And my daughter had a 2-hour delay, and I did not. Which, I mean, whatever. I just went in 2 hours late.
Is what it is.
Exactly.
So. We had, you know, we're just kind of talking about how we got into coaching golf and this, that, and the other, and kind of the big barrier to entry that is golf for most of the kids that we coach. But I guess now in present day, Tyler and I are both coaching two completely different high schools. I'm at Pleasant Valley where my son Lydon plays, and people have seen him on Instagram and whatnot. Tyler is at the school that we teach at, East Stroudsburg South, which has a completely different demographic than the North High School does. We're still all in the same league. We're all in the EPC 18. We have an enormous conference. There's 18 teams that stretches from the Valley all the way up to the North High. Most, I mean, God, what am I lying, Tyler, if I say an hour and 45 away from the furthest God, south school?
Emmaus to North is without a doubt hour and 45.
Yeah. So you're talking a hike. You're talking the entire northeastern portion of Pennsylvania. That's our conference alone. So. Highly competitive, uber competitive, and pretty cool. But Skylar, so you're going to serve as moderator tonight. I don't have to. I can take off my interview, guys, and just be a regular guest right now. I love it.
Yep, definitely. So So welcome, podcast patrons. flip the script a little bit on Dan, who's usually the one headlining this thing. And. But today you get to sit in the guest chair, and
I like this. It's comfy over here. You know, we must have a real high budget for this guest chair.
I was gonna say you look real comfy. I'm in my like office chair, and so yeah.
All right, Tyler, where are you?
I'm sitting in my son's room at his desk because it's the only quiet place in my house.
I love it.
You know, we've talked kind of a lot about like the start of this podcast and how it, like the earliest episodes are kind of like borderline unlistenable. And I recorded our first couple from our mudroom, which is like downstairs in a basement. I was sitting on a folding chair. So,
well, and they're also lost in the ether right now because I believe they're on some other, I don't know, Discord server from what was that dude's, what was the name of his thing?
His logo was a dumpster fire, wasn't it? Like, I'm dead serious. I think his logo was a dumpster fire.
Yeah, I think that's what our first few episodes were.
Yeah, pretty much. So speaking of dumpster fires, not even really, but the golf seasons that you guys hosted or coached this year were not dumpster fires, from what I understand.
Yeah, I mean, hell, we had we went 8-8, which was the first 500 or above record in I think almost 20 years at PV. So and I'll tell you what, with, you know, we have one golfer, right? We have one junior golfer. You know, I'm not ashamed to say this, my son, he's the hardest worker in the room. And then we have a very athletic number two who shoots somewhere in the mid 80s. And then from there, we've got three kids that, you know how to swing a club, but I don't think anybody in any way, shape, or form would call them golfers.
The kid, the number two kid, is he, would you call him a golfer who's athletic, or just an athletic kid who kind of like understands like how to move his body and can swing a golf club effectively?
That's actually a great question. He's a basketball player as well. He used to play baseball. He loves golf. Like, he really does love golf. So even in the spring, summer, and leading into the fall, like past golf season, he's always playing with his mom and stuff. But I wouldn't consider him a golfer. Like, he's just a straight Muni course kid. If you put him, like, anytime that we play the private country clubs, I mean, he blows up. Can't chip, can't putt type deal, you know?
Gotcha.
You know, whereas, like, I would consider a real golfer can probably within a hole or two get a feel of those type of greens. But the thing is, you know, God, I remember the first time I ever played greens that were super fast. And, like, I look like I never played golf before, you know, because Scott, you and I grew up playing, you know, Eisenhower and Kaniak Park on Long Island, and just, you know, complete
track. Yeah, absolutely. And by the way, we have to do a my course series on Kaniak Park.
Oh, 100%. That's yours, without a doubt. You've got that reserved.
Tyler, what about you? How'd your season go?
So, as compared to where I used to coach, it was a very successful season. However, we definitely have areas to grow. The one thing I changed this year, at North, recruiting golfers was always very tough. And the way I did it was I would go to the AP classes and I would recruit kids that are going to go into business fields. I'd be like, hey, you're going to have meetings on the course one day. You don't need to be good at it. You just need to be good enough that nobody knows how bad you are. And I found that I was always fighting an uphill battle because a lot of times kids that are in AP classes don't necessarily have the best body control and athletic ability. this year I took a kid on who was going into his senior year. He's a baseball player. He was in Dan's advanced strength class in the spring, and Dan and I convinced him to come out for golf. He started the year, his first round that he ever played, he shot a 144. We picked the ball up at double par. So he picked the ball up on every hole. And by the end of the year, he was averaging 100 and shot under 100 a couple times. And it kills me that he was a senior and that I didn't have more time to work with him because our season's 6 weeks long. And in 6 weeks, he went from double parring everything to being able to shoot under 100. So I think that changed how I'm going to be recruiting from now on. And I'm going to be looking for those baseball players that don't do a fall sport. Softball players, get them out. I have a girl that's a softball player and she did the same thing, came out and just worked hard all year. And you can see the drops.
You know what? I think that's a great example that regular people listening to this podcast can take in, is that if you put that time in, like, this is a 6 week time frame. And granted, this is someone that didn't know about golf and dropped all those strokes. But if you really and truly dedicate yourself to this game, I mean, you will see improvement.
Yeah, I mean, and that 6 week time frame, like, there's only so much improvement you're going to see in 6 weeks. But If you get a kid who's young and athletic and willing to work at it, like, yeah, you're definitely going to get something. But yeah, I mean, that especially like grabbing a senior at the end, like that definitely puts a limitation on, you know, how much improvement you're going to see and the amount of kids that might potentially be interested in. Cause I know like a lot of kids, you know, back in the days when I was in the classroom, there were kids who were into other sports who wouldn't try out for things because they didn't want to not play. They didn't want to not be good.
Yeah, you get, for
like,
sure. Those
competitive kids that's just not like something they're interested in. What about in terms of other sports that go on, in the fall, because the seasons are a little bit different in Pennsylvania than New York. Is there like a recruiting, you know, ground that you would tap into that is just not available to you because those kids are all into another sport that's like huge in your area, in your school? Like, for example, like my school, like girls field hockey is like the top sport. And that pulls away from the girls' soccer team, which runs at the same season.
Yeah, we have. Yeah, I mean, We have soccer. Yep.
Cross country.
Football.
What else?
Football. Yep. Fall cheerleading, field hockey.
Yeah.
Volleyball. I think
if field hockey didn't fall in the same season, I bet you. You could get some really good field hockey girls with that natural motion. Cause it's like hockey, you know what I mean? And look at hockey players. They're just natural, you know, at hitting like these big old power draws. I think you could probably definitely get a few of those. We've actually been successful, believe it or not, getting cross country kids to leave cross country to play golf. And I don't want to sound like a jerk, like, oh, I'm taking these kids away, you know, but they realize, hey, man, I'd rather be walking 5.5-6 miles and enjoying myself than having to run 3 miles or so. We have two converted cross-country kids on our golf team.
Yeah, next year we're running into an issue because I have two kids that are in band, marching band, as well as golf. And they're changing their practice schedule. Instead of practicing at night, they're going to practice after school. And so they're going to have to choose between golf and marching band. And I don't know what they're going to choose. Golf's 6 weeks. They both love it, but marching band's a class that they're in all year long. So, you know, it's going to be an uphill battle to fight for them to choose for golf, but we'll see how it goes.
Here's one of the things that I think is real interesting is that we get kids too, and I'm sure you do, Tyler, as well, that are kind of like, well, coach, I can't make every practice because I work. You know, it's one of those things where we're a varsity sport, but I'm also really understanding to that because they're not good, right? Like, honestly, they suck at golf. So it's so hard to tell a kid, hey, man, you need to come to practice and keep shooting 130s and not work, you know?
Right.
And it's like, if I'm a kid, I'm like, coach, I suck at this sport. I'm only here because maybe my friends are, or I like you, or I like being out on the course. But let's be honest, I could be doing something productive with my time and making money. So we run into that a little bit as a problem as well.
There's that. And there's the, you know, Leiden has the opportunity, but how many kids do we have that have the opportunity to go to an indoor range, during the winter? I mean, we're shut down pretty much for golf for 5 months a year. And, you know,
the sickos aren't. The sickos are only shut down for maybe 2.5-3 months. The normal people, yes, I get it. You're right.
You and I played on snow before, but the kids, they hang up their clubs, they don't touch them. And so many things you have to reteach year after year. Intramural start, and I'm like, oh, we're starting at ground zero again.
Go ahead.
We don't have where we're at. I mean, I'm about 30 minutes northeast of where Dan's at, and to me the closest decent indoor simulator is still about 45 minutes away. To get to the one that Dan's been going to is probably about an hour and 15
it's
from
a hike
my house
for you. Yeah,
so it's there's really nothing around here for the kids to be able to do besides go out on, you know, the dog track courses that'll let them go out when the greens are covered in snow. you know, a lot of the courses just won't let them on. So there's not a lot of options for them.
I think, you know, you mentioned it before with intramurals, and we both run intramurals throughout the summer and leading right up to the season. And it's funny because a lot of people say all the time, they're like, well, you're a golf coach. You know, you don't really do much. You just kind of follow around the kids on the course. You give them water, ask them about their score, maybe talk about putting a little bit, course management. But it's funny because you and I both have only ever coached golf teams that are not very good. And so the teaching and coaching that we do is astronomical compared to some of these other teams that win the league or go on to states, because every single one of those starting five kids have their own private instructor. They're members at private courses. It's just a different type of child that we're coaching compared to maybe some more of these money school districts, or maybe not even money school districts, but people with access to courses. You know, yeah. Look, everyone knows our nine-hole course, Indian Mountain, is our home course, right? Like the goat track of all goat tracks. And even though they've put money into it, not a single person in the world would mistake this course for a high-end private country club.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we are coaches, and some of the coaches of the best teams are more chaperones than coaches.
That's a great way of putting it. Nice guys, but names. You're right.
I won't say names, but there's
They're not listening anyway.
There's a coach from a Lehigh Valley team that told me he corrected a thing in a kid's swing, and the next day they're at practice, and a guy pulls up on a golf cart and starts cursing at him, going, "What do you think you're doing? I'm his swing coach. You don't tell him what to do. You take him from point A to point B, and you give him water."
It's unreal, man. It's unreal.
That's great. I mean, and that's definitely accurate, like in terms of the chaperone versus coach. Like, I know, like the golf coach, air quote, in the school that I worked in, at one point, not the current one, I don't think had ever picked up a golf club. He was just a guy who was willing to chaperone. And he actually at one point reached out to me. He's like, "Hey, like, could you show like these kids like something?" And I'm like, "Yeah, sure. Like what?" And he's like, "Oh, I don't know anything about golf. Just come and watch them and decide what you want." Like, I'm okay.
Well, here's a funny story. The guy that has now taken over where Tyler and I both coached literally does not know anything about golf. And when I say anything, I mean anything. So he's also the rifle coach. He's like the girls' tennis coach, and he also picked this up. So one of our first matches, I'm introduced to this individual, and they say, "Oh," and he coaches at PV. He actually used to coach up north, and the guy, like, his eyes lit up. And he said, hey man, I got a few questions for you." I said, "Yeah, of course, man. What do you need? And he's like, "So I've got two kids." "Oh, okay." I said, "Two kids ready to go out?" He's like, "No, I have two kids on my team." I said, "Two kids on your team. That's awesome." I said, "Congratulations. Real good, you know, recruiting there." And I know Tyler had a bunch more before that, and so did I. So
I had eight last year.
Yeah, so my highest ever was nine. So he said, "Yeah, I got these two kids, and so I'm just going to send them off of this hole right here." I'm like, "You can't. That's not the first or the 10th hole. They have to play with, like, other scoring markers." And he's like, "What do you mean by scoring markers, like playing partners?" Like, well, they have to play with other kids from other teams, so we know that they're keeping accurate score. And he's like, "Oh, we do this thing where if a kid gets a real high number, they pick the ball up and go to the next hole." I said, "Oh, you play like double par." I said, "Yeah, that's cool. You know, we do too, whatever." So he goes out with both these two kids, and within 100 yards off the tee, both of the kids pick the ball up, jump on the back of his cart, zoom off to number 11. I watch. Another 100 yards, they both pick the ball up, getting this. They finished nine holes in like 48 minutes, these two kids, because they never even made the green.
Yeah.
That's not and golf.
Their home course is the same as my home course. And the running joke in the district this year was that I had to coach two teams and got one paycheck. Because during practices, I'd have to go up to his kids and be like, "Hey, guys, you got to do this. You can't be doing this." He was giving them carts and letting them drive around carts at practice. They're
I didn't know that. That's awesome.
They're 14-year-old kids, almost rolled it down a hill one day. And I was just like, hey, you can't do that. What? Why not? Because it's the school's insurance money. If they flip a cart, that's going to come back on you. Really? Yeah. Yeah. You can't do that.
Hey Tyler, what's your home course?
Pocono Hills.
Formerly Fernwood. You know what it is.
Thank you. Okay. That explains it. Okay.
It's a, it's 14 really nice holes and four that are like, what were you thinking? Like, in what planet is this a good idea?
It's probably been like 20 years, but Dan and I definitely played there.
I think that's a good way of putting it, Tyler. You got 14 good holes, and then you got 14 holes designed by a recovering heroin addict that lives under a bridge.
It just fit the landscape, so they just threw a flag in and called it good.
Yeah. No, I mean, that's
about right.
There's a hole there. It's hole 17. It is, as a crow flies, 260 yards, par 5. Mm-hmm. It is a 210 yards to a 90 degree turn, actually more than 90, like an acute an acute angle of a dog leg to then go back uphill another 100 yards. So it's super easy, but kids all the time think they should hit driver. They're like, it's a par 5. I should hit driver. And then they end up driving through the driving through the fairway onto the other, onto hole 10. But I've been there with actually a coach from another team who there's villas that block off where the green is to where the tee box is. And he was like, the green's right over those villas, right? And I'm like, yeah. He's like, yo, if I tee this up really high, I can get over those villas and I can put it on the green. And it's the first and probably only time in my life I'll ever see an albatross putt. But he didn't sink the putt, but he tapped in for eagle. He had an albatross putt from like 25 feet away. And I was like, that's stupid.
You know, that story could have gone one of two ways. And I'm glad it went the way that it did. But there's also the, yeah, if I tee it up real high, I can hit it over those villas. And then the ball hit the window and we ran.
Tyler, how many times have you hit those?
I haven't hit those on 14. I've hit those houses multiple times. It's the one with the elevated green, long par 4, the elevated green.
Because
if you hug the left side of the fairway, it gives you the best approach shot because it takes that big tree out of the green. So I always hug the left side of the fairway, and sometimes I squeezed a little too hard on my hug.
I've hit
windows. I've hit siding multiple times. But all I do is I put my club away calmly, get back in my cart, and drive backwards.
That's all.
So let's go back to the coaching. So I know kind of Dan's like high school golf history. But Tyler, did you play golf in high school?
I didn't. When I was
tell them what sports you played.
So when I was a kid, my dad is a 2-time New Jersey state champion football player. My brother was a really good football player in the Hall of Fame at our high school. So I was like, oh, I got to play football. I love football. I love watching football. I suck at football. And I tried really hard, but I wasn't good. So my freshman, sophomore year, I played football. I was a 4-year varsity swimmer. And then I think I did track once or twice, just throwing shot put around and javelin and just kind of goofing off. But then,
did you swim for Dan?
Dan was my coach my senior year. It was like his second year teaching.
Yep.
When I first joined, like, I am not a natural athlete. When I first joined swimming, the head coach at the time pulled my dad aside and told him he should quit. My dad was like, what? He's like, he should quit. He's not good enough. And my dad told me that. And I took that as like, I was like, no, I'm going to F you. I'm not going to quit. I'm going to prove you wrong. I actually asked him years later why he did that. And he said, because I could tell you were the type of person that would piss you off and make you work harder. But I started to get a lot better at swimming. I found my niche in that which is the 500 distance event, and fell in love with it. So I just decided year round to focus on swimming and to keep working hard at that. And then, yeah, so I swam there, and then I swam very briefly in college, my first college at Elon University. We went to our first, it was like kind of a club team, and we went to our first meet, and it was against Duke University. And the kid from Duke beat me by a minute in the 500. And I hit the wall. I pushed up out. I looked at the water and I said, and that's that. I'm done. And that was my last. That was my last competitive swim meet, was getting beat by a minute by a kid from Duke. He swam a 4:32 and I swam a 5:38. And I was like, yep, I'm done. All right, I'm out of here.
Well, let me tell this story to make you feel a little bit better about yourself. I actually am a very good athlete. and I wrestled Division I in college, but I also played in the golf club team because Scott and I have been playing golf, and I thought I was actually pretty good at golf. And so, long story short, I get pulled into our first tournament of the year, which we are hosting at Great Bear. We are on hole number one. You know it, Tyler. It kind of dog legs out, you know, a little bit. And all the carts are lined up on the left-hand side. Now, I've been playing golf for maybe 2 years at this time. Maybe. You know, but like the way Scott and I used to play, like, hey, take another mulligan. Hey, that's good. Don't worry about it. Hey, just drop a ball there. You're fine. Oh, you found one in the woods? Ah, no penalty. So I've been playing with the golf team for about 2 weeks, and the coach said, hey, we don't have enough people to field the team. Can you play this Saturday? And I was like, hell yeah, I can. Right? Had nothing to do, no wrestling practice, no nothing whatsoever. So I'm playing with a buddy on my team and two kids from Penn State. And I tee off last, and everyone smokes. It hits the fairway. I'm like, I'm ready to go, man. You know, and look, I had no business playing any sort of competitive golf at this time. I probably had no business being on a golf course at this time, to be honest with you. So all the carts are lined up. There's probably 20 carts filled with coaches, filled with kids waiting to tee off. And I duck hook one so hard into these carts. Kids scatter. Coaches duck, run for cover. The ball is rattling underneath one of the carts. It finally settles. I take another ball out of my bag, and I go to tee it up. And the kid on the team stops me and says, Dan, what are you doing? I said, I'm just going to tee another one up. My buddy and I do it all the time. It's fine. Don't worry about it. He says, bro, this is a competitive collegiate tournament. You've got to play that one where it lies. I said, no, stupid. You can't. It's under a cart. I got to tee another one up. He goes, if you tee another one up, you're going to be hitting your third shot. I'm like, no, I'm not. That one didn't count. It's not in play. So let's just say the rest of the round went like that. I shot 131. In my first competitive collegiate golf tournament, finished dead last by probably, I don't even know, probably 40 strokes. I did make one par that entire day.
That's
one of the last times that I felt completely and utterly humiliated on a course. Like I wanted to hide. I didn't want to sign my score. I wanted to just get in the car and go home and like not talk to a soul.
I can tell you the last time I was humiliated on a course, it was...
last time I beat you?
Nah.
No.
I mean, you had a ringer on your team when you played me, so... Dan played with my son, and I played with his son, and Dan beat me. But we had... This was about 3 years ago. And we had a match at Bethlehem Muni, and I forget what hole it is. I think it's maybe like 7. Coming back, the road's on your right. As you're teeing off, the road's on your right, and I hit this thing.
Oh, that's 9.
At 9, okay. And I just push it. I just push it, but it had a little bit of a draw to it, so I push it over the road, and then it draws to maintain a perfectly straight line with the road. And the coach from Liberty's like, "You've got to be kidding me!" And I don't know how I didn't hit a car. It hopped like 3 different cars on the road and went off. And all the coaches for the rest of the day were just, mercilessly mocking me. And I was so humiliated. I was like, I can't believe I just did that. I look like such an idiot. I almost ruined somebody's car. And yeah, that was the most, I had my head down in shame the rest of the day. And it doesn't make it better when my kids come back and I had one kid under a 115. And I'm like, okay, we're going to go home now. You guys have a great day.
Just pretend Scott, you're never here, please.
Scott, when was your last kind of wanted to hide your head in the sand moment on a golf course?
I mean, the one that most sort of like sticks out of my head, and it's fairly recent. I was playing in the semifinals of the club championship at Southern Dutchess in 2019. And I had been leading my match up until like the 16th hole. And then the guy I was playing with, you know, he got it up even. And there's this one hole where it's one of those holes where if you hit your drive kind of like anywhere on the fairway, you'll be okay. And if you don't, then it's going to be a problem. And I hit mine on the fairway and I'm thinking, all right, well, like I'm in great shape right now. He hits his on the fairway, kind of not too far from mine. And the fairway and the hole's like next to the green for another hole. And I'm out in the fairway. I'm kind of, you know, everyone kind of on that hole, they know it's the semifinals of the club championship. They're kind of watching. They're all stopping, checking it out. And I shanked my second shot into a tree kind of not too far from the third hole. So then I had to walk over the third green. Then I had to walk over to the green where this group of people who were watching the match while, you know, completing their round were kind of waiting. They're sitting there. Now I got a little audience. And let's just say it took me about four shots to get up to where the green is. And it again, just having the crowd around me just did not make it any better.
Yeah, it's a tough game, man. It'll humble you in a heartbeat.
Well, and then actually I should probably rewind a little bit. The hole before, I hadn't been putting all that well all day. I stuck my tee shot to probably like 4 feet. The guy who I was playing with made a long birdie putt and he just looked at me and he's like, the way you've been putting, I'm making you putt that. And I missed it.
Oh.
So yeah.
Yeah. So real quick, going back to just this past season with high school golf, I figure you guys like this story. Dan, this story might ring a bell or two.
Okay.
So it's match day against Easter Osberg South and PV. It's the last match of the year.
Yeah. And you know, I was going to reference this. I told you that. Go ahead.
And so, you know, Dan and I are out. We're hitting a couple holes. Dan's the assistant coach of his team. I'm the head of my team. I don't have an assistant. And so we're out playing. And the head coach from his team is out doing his own thing. And all of a sudden, I get a message from one of my kids like, yo, coach, something's going on out here. I'm like, what are you talking about? He's like, yo, you need to get to 7 right now. You just got to see it. I'm like, what's going on? So Dan and I head over to 7. Head coach of Dan's team is I like covered in, I forget what they're called, but those little like sticky things that like.
Yeah, like from like the pricker bushes, basically.
Yeah. And he's just, you can't even see him. All of a sudden, you just see balls come flying from this brush out on the middle of the fairway. This is not an exaggeration. 300 balls just in the middle of the fairway.
Easily.
During a varsity match. Like, if any kid hit their ball in there, and he said, he goes, yeah, a kid hit theirs in there. I just told him to pick one and go with that one. Just
so,
throwing out balls. These were the crappy ones. He was keeping the good ones and filling up those like giant like cheese ball buckets. Mm-hmm. He had it filled with Chrome Softs, with Pro V1s, with like Bridgestone E6s, just filled to the brim. This guy is a lunatic, just grabbing everything. It was amazing. It was the best thing I've ever seen.
So I've got to give some context to this story. Because it needs it. So the guy that has been coaching for 30 plus years. He's ready to retire. He's retiring when Leiden graduates. That's his plan. So he's been coaching, and he doesn't really like, great guy. He's awesome. Love him to death, but he doesn't really coach. I do the coaching. He wanders in the woods and collects balls. And Tyler's not exaggerating. If he gets less than 500 balls on a golf course, he considers that a loss. So he resells them on eBay. He resells them to random people. We in our storage shed, in our golf storage shed that we have at one of the soccer fields that we use as a makeshift driving range, we have 20,000 golf balls in there in boxes. Okay, boxes that hold 1,000 balls. We have 20 of them. I said, this is enough to last until I die. Why do you keep collecting them? He goes, I don't know. I think I'm addicted. I think it's a habit. I can't break it. We were at the district finals. And he says, hey, take the cart and score these kids. I got to go into the cornfields with a backpack and just came out with like 400 balls 3 holes later. Covered in mud, covered in corn stalks. And stuff. It's insane. He goes anywhere, and he's been doing this for years. And every one of the other coaches in the conference in the league knows it. So they know that, like, hey, we're not going to see Steve for about 2 hours or so until he collects balls, and then he'll come back and play with us a little bit.
He's like the guy like at the range or something like that who's got, you know, like a little like table or something that he sets up, and he's just got a bunch of balls in Ziploc bags.
That's him. So I'm gonna tell and honestly, Tyler, that I told you that when we left that day, the day that Tyler's referencing was probably like my favorite coaching moment of all time, because I was coaching against one of my best friends who is one of my old students, who's now coaching against my son as I'm coaching my son. And it was the night that Lai set the school record for the lowest season scoring average there. He needed to shoot, I don't remember what he needed to shoot. I think he needed to shoot like 74 or 75 that day, and he shot 69.
I think he shot
69 there to do it. And like, it was awesome because he was playing with two of your seniors who were great kids. And I mean, the vibes that, like, it was so cool. I remember just walking off with Tyler and being like, dude, this is a moment like that will completely be ingrained in my memory, not just my golfing memory, my memory. But going back to scavenging golf balls, I'm going to tell this hilarious story when I coach up north. And I got tons of stories about this, but this is the best one. Our course had a pond on it, right? This downhill par 3, 176 yards, played like 155, really downhill. People that know mountain golf and Poconos golf, they understand what I'm talking about. And I'm playing with my top kids, and then I'm jumping back into groups to play with them as they play through. And these two kids were my last group of the day. So they were like my fifth group, like the 8 and 9 or the 9, 10, whatever it is. So I jump back to them, but they're not on the tee box. So I drive all around. I don't see them. I'm thinking maybe they walked it in because they were getting too hot. And it was like a scorch, like 95 out, you know, type deal. They were stopping for water every two holes. And I see my 1 and 2 up by the clubhouse. I said, guys, have you seen Gio? Have you seen Darium? No, coach. Okay, I go to my 3s and 4s. Same question. No. 5, 6, same question. 7, 8, no. Same question. Oh, I said, this is not good. I've lost two kids on a golf course. But how can you lose two kids on a golf course? There's nowhere you can really go. And this particular course was surrounded by main roads, so there's nowhere you can go. So I said, guys, you got to fan out. I said, get carts, go out. We got to find these two kids. I'm circling back past this par 3, and I just hear, coach, coach. I got two of my golfers, no shirts on, pants rolled up to their knees, waiting in this pond. They must have had 500 balls that they pulled out. They had a system, Scott. They were already separating them by brand. They were cleaning them with the water that they were supposed to be drinking, fouling them off, and then stacking them in little pyramids. So they are beyond excited. Now, I haven't seen these kids in 45 minutes. I thought I lost them. I'm ready to call the police that I got missing children here. They are down there setting up shop, opening like their own business in the middle of a pond. I said, guys, what the hell are you doing? Well, coach, you wouldn't understand. we just hit two balls into the pond. I was like, let's check. They went by the edge. We checked, and it's like a gold mine down here. So we just we couldn't stop. We thought we pulled them all out, and then we saw more. Covered in algae, pants soaking wet. I said, guys, where are your shirts? They're like, oh, we put those in the car so they didn't get dirty. So then they start yelling to all of our kids, come on over. What do you like? You like Bridgestones? You like TaylorMade? You like Titleist? It was, oh, my God. Yeah, it was great. It's fantastic. Kids are hilarious sometimes.
So let me ask you this question, because those are moments that you'll always remember as a coach. And as and both of you were high school athletes in different sports, are there any sort of lessons you took from your coaches that you've sort of applied to the kids that you coach now? And, you know, Dan, I know you were real close with your wrestling coach. I know he was very, very motivational for you, very inspirational.
100%. Still talk to him to this day. Still do. Go ahead, Tyler. Well, you still talk to your coach too.
Yeah, I still talk. I'm talking to my coach right now. Yeah, I mean, so Dan took over the assistant coach of swimming my senior year. Never swam a day in his – well, I mean, he swam, but never competitively swam a day in his life. But he was doing more of the strength and conditioning outside of the pool. But I learned a lot from Dan, from other coach Adam. But mainly, like, golf, I'm much more relaxed. When I used to coach swimming, I was a different coach. It was – you know, with golf, kind of, you have to be a lot more relaxed, a lot, you know, it's not as much coaching as like guiding and, you know, talking them through stuff. Cause if I coached the way I coached swimming, kids would shut down immediately. Cause I mean, I always called when I was a swimmer and when I coached swimming, I always called it's basically an abusive relationship. While you're there, it's the most miserable thing in the world. And you're like, I hate this. I need to get out. And the second you walk away, you're like, that was good. I'm glad I did that. I want to go back. And where golf's the opposite, like while they're there, I want them relaxed. Like I try to really, the biggest thing I try to do with my kids is get them out of their heads. And tell them, I mean, this is something that Dan's told me because he's played with me long enough. I was actually thinking about it today. The first time I played golf with Dan was I was 18. It was right after I graduated high school. So that's now 19 years ago. So it's been a while. But Dan's seen me have like full brain meltdowns on the course. And the best words he ever told me were, and like somebody else could hear this and be like, that's not great advice. But to me it is. It's everyone sucks at golf. Like you're not a scratch golfer. Don't think that you're going to be a scratch golfer immediately. Like, work on your game. And so for my first 10 years of really playing golf, I played like how Dan played with his buddies before competitive, you know, oh, I hit it in the woods, just re-tee up another one. It's fine. And I'm walking around telling people like, yeah, I'm like a 9-10 handicap. And then I was like, no, you know what? I'm actually just going to like, the number doesn't mean anything. And so then I started keeping my actual handicap. And at first, it was crazy depressing to go from what I thought was a single-digit handicap to a healthy double-digit handicap. But now I'm able to, like, see that and move on. And I don't get so pissed off when I have, you know, a bad hole. And I try to push that on the kids. Like, you're going to have bad holes. You're not a scratch golfer. Like, you're going to have a blow-up hole. Get it out of your head. Move on to the next one. And don't have two bad holes in a row. Because so much of golf is so psychological. And I mean, let's be honest, high schoolers aren't exactly the least emotional people. You know, the littlest thing can go wrong and it completely sets them off for the rest of the day. So I always, you know, through Dan, and it wasn't necessarily while he was coaching me in swimming, but it was just later in life, you know, he's been a mentor and stuff like that. So he's been able to show me things that I'm able to apply to my coaching, to my teaching, to heck, even my parenting, you know? So it's been cool to be able to have that relationship with a coach that, you know, I started as a teacher who gave me a D on a project that I thought I deserved an A on. I mean, we were supposed to make a video about, you know, it was driver's ed. So actually,
this is completely irrelevant.
No, this involved a golf course.
We did involve a golf course.
we needed to do a video on reckless driving, so we drove a Jeep through a golf course. And I submitted that for a project, and he gave me a D minus on it. But to go from somebody like that to then my coach to then a mentor while I was in school for education. And then now he helps me out with, you know, stuff in school, stuff with coaching golf. So it's been pretty cool that it's not just been my high school experience, but kind of a lifelong experience.
Look how far we've come. From damaging golf courses to now trying to help repair them and keep them healthy.
If somebody did that to a golf course and I witnessed it, I would try to murder that person now.
Yeah.
Let me ask you a question about reckless driving on a golf course, Tyler. have you ever fallen out of a golf cart that Dan was driving?
I don't think so.
Okay.
So I don't think so.
That makes one of us then.
I gotta say, I did the way I drive a golf cart is the
same way. I'm sweating here laughing. Listen, Tyler, you would be very happy. And this is off the rails. I hope people are still listening at this point because this is just true comedy right now. Listen, Scott has fallen out. maybe not due to some fault of my own. My own children have fallen out. I actually saved Drew from dying one time by grabbing the back of his neck of his collar of his shirt. He was about 2 inches from the ground. My wife has also almost fallen out. But you will like this even more, Tyler. And I don't think you know this story. On the – what's a downhill par 5 hole at Pocono Hills? Number 6?
Yeah.
Goes downhill, then it goes uphill.
It goes up, down, up, yeah, at
yes.
6.
I am driving a translucent 6 foot tall redhead in a cart there. It is wet. It is slippery and it's supposed to be 90 degrees. Well, I took it 90 degrees, Tyler. I took it straight from a cart path down 90 degrees and then spun around off the ball. This 6 foot translucent redhead hit the ground so hard and rolled about 3 times on the ground and got up and was just like, what the F? And I was like, how are you not paying attention? You always got to be paying attention when you're in your golf cart. I was like, that's your fault right there.
Oh, I would give any amount of money to see that.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Now you're crying.
I have tears coming out my eyes. Picture.
I know you do. I know you do. Now, let me go back and answer the question. Tyler, thank you. That was very nice. It was very sweet, all the things you said. I do truly appreciate that.
Beautiful.
That was podcast gold right there. People are listening right now. They need to – I might put that on the story to headline this show when it drops. I will tell you this. What I took from my coach, and it doesn't work with every golfer. I use it with Lydon because he's driven and has a desire to get better. But it's just hands down, be the hardest worker in the room. Like, there'll be people more talented than you. There'll be people bigger, stronger, faster. But there's no reason for anyone to ever outwork you. Because if they do, that's just laziness on your part, right? If people are outworking you, it's just because you don't care enough to put that time. And so that's what I try to stress on him. And thankfully, he has a little bit a ton of my drive and determination, and he's the one now pulling me to the course, to the range, to set up times on the sim for lessons and this and that, where I'm like, hey, let's chill today. It's too many days in a row hitting balls. Like, I don't want to go a day without it, you know. So that's what I would recommend to people out there, is just, especially junior golfers or collegiate golfers, people playing competitive golf, just work on the right things and work on them harder than everyone else, you know. And you don't have to be Vijay Singh beating 30,000 balls a day, but do it correctly, do it right, do it consistently, be the hardest worker in the room.
All right. I mean, those are some, I think, good lessons for any sport, and obviously for golf. You definitely want to, you know, kind of understand what your own ability is and always be working hard. Touch the clubs every day and do what you got to do to get better, so.
For sure, for sure. All right, so are we good? I mean, we're kind of like an hour.
Like, I feel like the golf youth of America is in good hands. So.
Heck yeah.
Tyler, you want to hit him with the tagline?
Either get busy golfing or get busy dying.